something that we haven't talked about for a long time. Japan has been with us all the way, and it's amazing that we had a little conflict with Japan. You may have heard about it. And that after such a horrible thing, yet the two nations are the closest friends and partners that you can be, and based on a shared commitment to freedom, democracy, security, prosperity, civilization, and just basic human achievement. It's amazing, actually.
This is my video update on this Tuesday afternoon, October the 28th, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with the meeting between U.S. President Trump and the newly elected Prime Minister of Japan, Takaichi, who has been in office for about 1 week, and they met, and they signed a rare earth deal. They signed a rare earth deal. That's right. They signed some other agreements. I believe a defense military agreement as well. And this has been called the beginning of the golden age of U.S.-Japanese relations. The new golden age of the ever-growing U.S.-Japan alliance is what they're calling this this meeting between Trump and Takaichi. And in rare earths, that was the big agreement that Trump signed with Japan, because rare earths are very, very rare, extremely rare. Can't find them anywhere. Actually, rare earths are everywhere, to be quite honest. Rare earths are not so rare. I'm sure Japan has a lot of rare earths. I'm sure the United States has a ton of rare earths. Probably over there, there's a bunch of rare earths. The problem with rare earths is the processing and the refining. Look at all those rare earths. My God, look at all those rare earths. I think I'm going to have to sign a rare earth agreement with U.S. President Trump. The golden age of U.S. Alex relations. Yeah, it's all about refining and processing. That is what has given China a 20 or 30 year lead in rare earths. But they signed an agreement for rare earths. Got to count for something. It's a start. Signing an agreement is a start, and they're going to invest all kinds of money in the refining and processing facilities, industries for these rare earths in Japan. And so that was the big win for Trump. The new golden age in U.S. Japan relations in the U.S.-Japanese alliance. They even made hats. Japan is back, according to the White House. Back from where? I don't know. Where was Japan, man? Where was Japan now that it's back? Was it hiding somewhere? I don't know. Maybe it was hiding over the Biden years. Maybe over the last four Biden years, Japan was kind of laying low, hiding out. But now it's back, according to the hat. The hat says Japan is back. It's all marketing, man. It's all marketing and spin. But you know what? The Japanese Prime Minister, who has been in office for 1 week, decided to nominate Trump for a Nobel Peace Prize. You cannot make this stuff up. No, you can't. Trump nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by the newly elected Prime Minister of Japan. Trump hailed Japan as an ally at the strongest level, describing Takaichi, who took office last week, as one of the greatest prime ministers, and in turn vowed to strengthen bilateral ties, which she praised as the greatest alliance in the world. Wow. She's 1 week in office, and she's already the greatest prime minister in the history of Japan. One of the greatest prime ministers. She's done a lot in a week, trust me. She has done a whole lot in a week to earn the praise, the title of greatest prime minister, or one of the greatest prime ministers. Oh, man. Anyway, from Li, the ex-account of Li Zejin. Again, rare earth is not that rare. The truly rare thing is the refining technique to obtain ultra-pure elements, which China holds absolute control for over 90% of the global production. Signing the agreement with Japan won't cut U.S.'s reliance on Chinese rare earth. Very true. So very true. But hey, you know, Trump can take these agreements in hand and present them to Xi Jinping when they meet on the 30th and say, here you go. I've got all these rare earth agreements, so I've got leverage over you now, Xi Jinping. Anyway, that is the meeting between Trump and the Prime Minister of Japan. And now let's talk about what Lavrov is saying about Trump and Project Ukraine, specifically about the Alaska summit. Lavrov, he talked about Trump and the Alaska summit to a Hungarian YouTube channel the other day, and it looks like he is making more statements about Trump and the Alaska summit, revealing what was going on for the past couple of months leading up to the summit in Alaska and Witkoff's trips to Moscow, his 5 trips to Moscow, and all of the rumors about deals being proposed by Russia and by the U.S. and all of that stuff. And Lavrov is revealing what was going on over all those months and all those trips from Witkoff and those meetings. And to summarize what Lavrov is revealing, he basically said, hello, my friends. He is basically revealing that, man, a lot of cats out today. What is going on here? You know, Cyprus has more cats than people. Just so you guys know, we have more cats than we actually have people living on the island. So that is why you see a lot of cats here. Anyway, Lavrov, he said, look, Witkoff would come to Moscow, and he would bring a proposal. When he was coming, he would bring various ideas and a proposal to Russia, which eventually was this proposal of Ukraine leaves Donbass, Donetsk, and we freeze the line at Zaporozhye and Kherson. In summary, that was the final proposal that Witkoff brought to Putin and to the Kremlin. And according to Lavrov, Putin told Witkoff, is this for real? Are you guys ready to discuss this framework? And Witkoff said, sure. And so they arranged a meeting in Alaska. They got the summit in Alaska, right? So that Putin could actually meet with Trump and the entire team, the U.S. delegation, and they could go over the proposal step by step. And that's what happened. They went to Alaska. They had the proposal that Witkoff had brought to Moscow and that he was discussing with Russia. And Putin went over the proposal step by step with Trump and Witkoff there. And according to Lavrov, Putin asked Trump, he asked Witkoff, is this correct? And then he asked Trump, are you guys ready to agree to this, or at least use this as a basis for negotiations, and Witkoff confirmed. But Trump, he balked, man. Yeah, he balked. He said that he has to discuss things with Ukraine and with the Europeans, and he has to think about it. And according to Lavrov, they're still waiting for Trump's response to his own proposal. His own proposal that Russia said, okay, we can discuss this in Alaska. And they left Alaska with the understanding, angry, of course, absolutely angry, but with the understanding that Trump was going to discuss this with his partners and his allies. And he was going to get back to Russia, and he never returned to Russia with an answer. Here is what Lavrov said. He was asked about a possible meeting with Trump, another possible meeting with Trump, as was Ushakov as well. He was asked about a possible meeting with Trump, and they both said, look, we're open to a meeting with Trump. We're open to diplomacy, but there's no timeline. We don't have any date or any indication as to when this would take place. And so Lavrov was asked about a possible meeting between Putin and Trump, and he said that we, as Russia, also need guarantees that the president's meeting will bring concrete results. We are ready for this result. Moreover, in Anchorage, when the meeting between President Putin and Trump took place in Alaska, we supported the proposals that U.S. President Special Envoy Representative Witkoff brought to Moscow a week earlier. In Alaska, through President Putin, we double-checked with Mr. Witkoff, who was present there, whether we understood his proposal correctly. He confirmed in the presence of his president that our understanding was correct, and we said that we are ready on this basis to move forward, to move towards finalizing the agreements. And basically, we are still waiting for the United States to confirm the proposals they conveyed to us and which we took as a basis. They presented the proposals, we agreed, and we're waiting for them to also agree on the proposals that they presented and came up with. Make it make sense. The worst diplomacy in all of history, everybody, courtesy of the Trump White House. How can you trust these guys? How are you going to be able to work with these guys if you're Russia? If you're any country, how are you going to be able to engage in diplomacy with these guys? Oh, man. Anyway, that is the revelation from Lavrov. That's what happened with all of the trips from Witkoff. That's what went down in Alaska. That was the deal that was presented. Still a very difficult sell from Putin to Russia to actually agree to freezing Zaporozhye and Kherson. Of course, Donetsk is free of Ukraine. Ukraine leaves Donetsk. The Ukraine military leaves Donetsk and Donbass. So you get that, but you freeze Kherson and Zaporozhye. That would have been a hard sell. But Putin said, okay, let's talk about it, right? We agree to talk about this proposal. And then when Putin agreed, in Alaska, in front of U.S. President Trump, according to Lavrov, Trump said, you know what? I have to talk about it with Zelensky and Macron and Starmer. Man, that is bad. That is so, so bad. That looks so bad. Peace through strength. Anyway, that is what Lavrov is saying now. Saying it very, very openly and very publicly. So the situation in Donetsk, since Alaska has deteriorated for Trump, for Ukraine, for his proxy in Ukraine, for Zelensky, for the collective West, and the Russian military, they are now sweeping up the encirclement in Pokrovsk, also in Kupiansk, in Donetsk, Pokrovsk, Mirnograd, and Kupiansk in Kharkov. They're They're clearing these areas of Ukraine military. Budanov, his office, the intelligence office, they're actually sending a special forces group to Pokrovsk in order to try and break through. But it looks like they're now trapped as well. That's how serious the situation is for Ukraine and for the collective West, that even Budanov has had to send his guys into Pokrovsk to try and prevent this catastrophe and try to break Russia's control over the region. And these guys are now said to be trapped in the area as well, and they will all be annihilated unless they surrender. Putin said if they surrender, then they will be treated as prisoners of war under the Geneva Convention. Not the mercenaries. The mercenaries will be annihilated and destroyed, but the soldiers will be treated as prisoners of war. But it doesn't look like that is going to happen. And so the Russian military, according to the Ministry of Defense, is now sweeping things up in these areas. Over 10,000 soldiers in both these regions. And that's going to probably take a couple of weeks to a little over a month, I would estimate. And then we will probably get the news from the Russian Ministry of Defense that Pokrovsk and Kupiansk have been fully captured, or as they would say, fully liberated would be the words that that they use. And with Pokrovsk under Russia's control, you're only left with Slavyansk and Kramatorsk, right? That's it. That is it. And then the big bargaining chip that Trump thought he had in Donetsk goes away. And the reason they say that that Trump decided to flip-flop, man, Trump is a bigger flip-flopper than Macron, huh? Trump is the king of flip-floppers. And the reason he decided to flip-flop from his own proposal, the reason he flip-flopped and told Putin he needs to discuss it further is because he was getting information from Rubio. I imagine Kellogg as well, and they were getting their information from the Green Goblin and from the UK and the Europeans. Trump was advised and he was told that Ukraine is holding on to Donetsk, and they're holding on in Pokrovsk, and they're actually pushing the Russians back and all of this nonsense. And now it is becoming clear that that was not the case. Bad diplomacy, bad advice, bad decision-making from Trump, bad negotiations from Trump. And I thought he was the master negotiator. Man, really bad. Bad all the way around. But speaking of Macron, he is now saying that he is going to send 2,000 soldiers from the Foreign Legion to Ukraine. France is preparing to deploy a contingent of 2,000 soldiers from the Foreign Legion to Ukraine to assist the Zelensky regime. This is according to the Russian Foreign Intelligence Service. Okay, the Russian Foreign Intelligence Service is 50-50. They're hit or miss. Sometimes they're spot on with the information that they put out there. Other times they're way off. So it's always 50-50 with the information that they publish. But this is what they're saying. Macron is getting ready to send 2,000 soldiers. What would 2,000 soldiers do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They would get annihilated. But maybe that's the point for France and Macron. Now that they feel they have Trump on their side, committed to Project Ukraine, which he is now, placing the sanctions on Russia and continuing to escalate with weapons, turning down his own proposal, they probably feel like they've got Trump now on side, no doubt about it. So what they're saying is, you know what, we can now work on getting the U.S. military involved in Project Ukraine, getting NATO involved in Project Ukraine. Of course, that means getting the U.S. military involved in Project Ukraine. And so they're going to come up with all kinds of schemes and tripwire ideas, right? Like sending 2,000 French troops into Ukraine, where Russia will annihilate those troops. And then Macron can fly to the White House and cry to Trump flip-flopper to flip-flopper. He'll be crying to Trump and say, you have to help us. You have to do something. Article 5, Article 5, Article 5, Article 10, Article 55. Come on, Trump, you can't abandon France. You can't abandon NATO soldiers. And that's going to be the plan, right? Now that they've got Trump and they have his commitment, now they can work on continuing to escalate all the way to the point where they can try and get the U.S. and NATO involved in this conflict, like really, really involved, boots on the ground involved in this conflict. So that's the information from the Russian Foreign Intelligence Service. Switching gears to the sanctions war that Trump has declared on Russia. We are getting statements from Besant and Whitaker. Whitaker is the NATO ambassador. He's the U.S. ambassador to NATO, the U.S. ambassador to a non-existent country known as NATO. Anyway, what a useless position that is. Besant and Whitaker, they are talking all kinds of smack. Besant, he was on Face the Nation, I believe, and he was asked about Dmitriev and the statement that he said where the sanctions on Rosneft and Lukoil will actually end up hurting the United States more than it will hurt Russia, or it will also hurt the United States because it's going to lead to an increase in gas prices. And basically, Besant's response to that was that Dmitriev is a propagandist. He said, "Why would you listen to a Russian propagandist?" So he mocked Russia's U.S. envoy. Good job, Scott Besant. And then he said that the sanctions will work, and they are working, and that India and China will stop buying Russian oil.
But Vladimir Putin's envoy, who is here in the United States, Kirill Dmitriev, I know you know him, said the sanctions will have, quote, absolutely no effect on Russia's economy. They will simply lead to higher prices at gas stations in the United States. Is Dmitriev wrong? And when will Russia actually feel the pain?
Well, I think Russia is going to feel the pain immediately. I can tell you that we've already seen India has done a complete halt of Russian oil purchases. Many of the Chinese refineries they have stopped. And, you know, Margaret, are you really going to publish what a Russian propagandist says? I mean, what else is he going to say? That, oh, it's going to be terrible and it's going to bring Putin to the table? Of course. The Russian economy is a wartime economy. Growth is virtually zero. Inflation, I believe, is over 20%. And everything we do is going to bring Putin to the table. It's oil that funds the Russian war machine. And I think we can make a substantial dent in his profits.
That's what Besant said to Face the Nation. And Whitaker, he said that Hungary, Turkey, and Slovakia will also abandon Russian oil and gas. And he said the United States is going to help Hungary, Turkey, and Slovakia abandon Russian oil and gas. He talked about how Hungary is in a difficult position. Hungary, Slovakia, landlocked in a difficult position. We understand their problem and why they need Russian oil and gas, but we're going to work with them to move them away from cheap, dependable, reliable Russian oil and gas and move them towards expensive U.S. oil and gas. And he mentioned Croatia, coming from Croatia. So that's how the United States is going to help Hungary, by increasing the cost of oil and gas, right? That's how it's going to help Hungary, by making the economic situation for Orban really bad as he heads into elections. Good friend, the United States, the Trump White House. That's what you get, Orban, for supporting Trump in the way that you did. Now Trump is going to reward you with expensive U.S. oil and gas from Croatia, right? The LNG. It's the LNG, I think, that goes to Croatia. Is it the oil that goes to Croatia and then they deliver it to Hungary, or maybe it's both? But either way, it's a lot more expensive and a lot less reliable than what they were getting from Russia and from pipelines like the Druzhba. So that's what Whitaker said. By the way, Orban is going to be traveling to the White House next week. And I'm sure Orban wants to discuss all of this with Trump. If I was Orban, I would sit down with Trump and I would say, bro, why did you throw me under the bus the way you did twice? You threw me under the bus with the Budapest summit. You used me there, threw me under the bus there. And now you're throwing me under the bus with oil and gas and energy. Why are you doing this to me? Why, bro? Why? I thought we were friends. Anyway, I don't like it. I don't like it. Bloomberg is reporting that, contrary to what Besant is saying, India is looking at ways to circumvent the sanctions, as will China. India state refiners weigh up Russia oil options after sanctions. And they're going to come up with all kinds of ways to circumvent these sanctions, right? So they'll get the tankers to meet somewhere in the world, right? And they'll move the oil from one tanker to another. They'll figure out ways to circumvent these sanctions, no doubt about it. Maybe in the short term, they'll talk about not purchasing oil from Russia, and they'll make a big deal about this, so that Trump and his White House can go out and say, you know, yay, we won. You see, we're really sticking it to Russia. And then Trump can talk about this in his speeches and in his interviews with Fox News, talk about how he was the only president to destroy Russia's energy industry, right? The hold that Russia had over India and China. He was the one that got it done. Biden didn't do it. I did it. And that's what Trump will be saying for the next 2-3 months. But behind the scenes, no doubt that India and China will find a way to circumvent these sanctions. I imagine China may even be more bold and just tell the United States to buzz off. India will find a way to circumvent these sanctions, but China may just tell the U.S. president, we don't care what you say. We're going to purchase Russian oil and now leave us alone, right? Anyway, Germany is talking about building the most powerful military in Europe. And Politico got hold of a secret procurement blueprint, right? A classified procurement blueprint, which outlines the German government's military wish list, which amounts to 377 billion euros in weapons, $400 billion. And Germany's goal is to build the most powerful military in Europe. Here we go again. Here we go again. Oh, we never learn, do we? Never learned. So anyway, yeah, that's Merz's goal. His plan is to shift the German economy away from cars and from all the other things that Germany was doing on the consumer side of things, and turn Germany into a war economy, right? They always talk about how Russia is a war economy. The reality is that Russia is not a war economy, but the reality is that BlackRock Merz is absolutely looking to turn Germany into a war economy. And that's all that Germany has left, right? They've destroyed their cheap gas connection to Russia. They've blown up, well, someone blew up Nord Stream. And so the only ideas that they have left anymore is war, is military production, to build a war machine. That's all they've got left when it comes to the German economy. And that's what they're going to do. Of course, they're running into the problem that the German economy is sinking. And so they're going to have to borrow a whole lot of money in order to turn Germany into a big military power. They're going to have to go into a whole lot of debt. We've been through this before with Germany, right? We've been through this song and dance before. But anyway, that is what Politico is reporting. And the Green Goblin he gave an interview to Axios, a phone interview to Axios, and the Green Goblin said that the oil sanctions are not enough. They are not enough. He's thankful for the Lukoil Rosneft oil sanctions. He said that's a good start. But what's needed now is tomahawks. We have to get tomahawks. You see, Zelensky's got a two-part plan, according to the interview from Axios, the two-part plan. You got to get the sanctions to apply the economic pressure on Russia, and you also need the long-range missile strikes to apply the military pressure on Putin, according to Zelensky. If the United States and the collective West does not apply these types of pressures on Russia, then you will never be able to get Putin to capitulate. You won't bring Putin to the negotiating table, as they say, for a just and fair peace, which is just code for a Russian capitulation. So as expected, Zelensky is now demanding of Trump to hand over Tomahawk missiles, long-range missiles, exclusive. Zelensky calls on Trump to follow up Russia sanctions with missiles. That is what Zelensky wants, missiles. And you know what's going to happen? Trump is going to give those missiles, maybe not Tomahawks, maybe Taurus, maybe something else. But the Trump is going to give those missiles, because when Zelensky demands something of any U.S. president, whether it's Biden or Trump, Zelensky gets what he demands. So that is the next stage of escalation, the long-range missile strikes, which will be missile strikes by the United States into the Russian Federation. And then all hell is going to break loose, if you believe the statements from Putin and Peskov, who have given very clear warnings that any long-range missile strikes from the United States into the Russian Federation will be met with an overwhelming response, according to Putin and to Peskov. So that's Axios. And the New York Times had an interesting... the New York Times, I got to see where I'm going, had an interesting article on drone manufacturing in Ukraine, the drone industry of Ukraine, with the title, 3 years ago, it was a casting agency. Now it has $1 billion in drone. Now it has $1 billion in drone contracts. Among the flood of Ukraine defense startups, one stands out to both its supporters and its critics, the drone maker Firepoint. So I'll just sum up this article, which highlights how the drone industry started out in basements in Ukraine, and now these basements have become weapon manufacturing startups, and they're now getting all kinds of money from Ukraine, which means they're getting all kinds of funding and money from the collective West. When they say they're getting money from Ukraine, what they really mean is that the collective West is now giving them all kinds of money, including a $1 billion contract to this company called Firepoint. And they're ramping up their drone manufacturing. And the interesting part about this Firepoint company, according to the New York Times, is that it used to be an entertainment company, a casting company, that worked with, take a guess, that worked with, come on, take a guess, an entertainment casting company in Ukraine that had a connection to the Green Goblin. Of course. Yes, isn't that interesting? And now they're getting a whole lot of money, the most money, according to the New York Times, or some of the most money in the defense funding area. They're getting $1 billion contracts now, this Firepoint, to manufacture drones. And you know what else Firepoint is manufacturing, according to the New York Times? Take a guess. Take a guess. You know what other weapon they're involved in manufacturing? Take a guess. The Flamingo. That's right. The Flamingo missile. No corruption going on here, everybody. No corruption. Yeah, a casting company which used to do work with Zelensky and his producers, directors, script writers, is now manufacturing drones and trying to manufacture this Flamingo missile, and they're getting billion-dollar contracts. This is the New York Times, not me. This is the New York Times investigation and their reporting. So anyway, interesting article from the NYT. What else should we discuss? Elon Musk has Grokopedia ready to go. He announced the launch of version 0.1, not version 1, version 0.1. So I checked it out, Grokopedia, which is competing with Wikipedia, and it's like a search engine, to be quite honest. It's just a search bar, and you just kind of type in a topic or a subject, and then it just gives you the information on that topic or subject. That's pretty much what Grokopedia is at the moment. But keep in mind, we're talking about version 0.1, not even version 1, right? So a long way to go for Grokopedia, but it's starting. It's out there now. Finally, we got a viable Wikipedia competitor, or at least a Wikipedia competitor with very deep pockets in the form of Elon Musk. So we'll be monitoring the development of Grokopedia. And should we do a clown world? I think we can now do a clown world and wrap this video up. By the way, if you like this video, hit that like button. If you like this channel, subscribe to this channel, and let's do a clown world. And in this clown world, we have Christian Amanpour interviewing the ex-NATO CEO, Jan Stoltenberg, a real meeting of the minds. Amanpour interviewing Stoltenberg, and she's interviewing Stoltenberg because he's promoting his new book, his memoirs. And Christian Amanpour asked Stoltenberg about Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov.
All Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, a unique combination of an elegant diplomat and a bully. And you also write that he insulted you at one point in a meeting. Why am I even sitting here, he said. You have no opinions of your own, Stoltenberg. You say only what your bosses permit you to say. How shocking was that?
It was not very shocking, but because that had been more or less his style for a long time. But
I'm Christian Amanpour, international correspondent and a very sophisticated journalist. And I don't know what Stoltenberg responded with that question from Christian Amanpour. I don't know what he said. He was about to say something. But the question was not only interesting from Amanpour, but factually correct from Lavrov, right? The statement from Lavrov was on point, right? What am I doing sitting here with you, Stoltenberg, when you don't really make any decisions? You only do what your bosses allow you to do or allow you to say, which is true. It's absolutely true. Why is Lavrov wasting his time with Stoltenberg, right? Might as well just go to the US and go straight to the source if you want answers, right? Anyway, that was Amanpour, her interview with Stoltenberg. And that's the video, theduran.locals.com. We're on X, we're on Rumble, we're on Telegram. And you know what? We're also on Substack. So we're on Locals and we're on Substack. And Alexander is writing articles, which are published now on Substack and on Locals, exclusive to Substack and to Locals. So definitely check out those platforms and subscribe to us on those platforms. The link is in the description box down below. Take care.